This topic builds on the one we saw last time, education, women studying Talmud, this being Smicha for Women or Leadership for Women, Women in Leadership is the title of Rav Lichtenstein's article. This is an example of a case where, like a dual phenomenon, where Rav Lichtenstein writes a paper on a topic. In this case, it was originally given out at the RCA conference convention in 2010, right around this time of year. Actually, this year's convention starts next week. And was published several years later, but it had an impact on an interesting impact on other writings. So first, the article itself will be very balanced on a controversial issue, and its reception will be interesting in that different sides try to claim Rav Lichtenstein for their position or say that he agreed with them. So this is something you have this a lot more with the Rav, partially because there's been more time, partially because he said more conflicting things. Here it's a case, will be a case where there's one short article where Rav Lichtenstein says what he says. We're going to read it, and you'll still see an interesting varied reception among different people, partially because it's such a nuanced, balanced piece that you can pull it in different directions. So that this is an example of that phenomenon. You have it in a few other cases. You don't have it that much usually because there are such programmatic articles generally. The article will lay out a position, so it's hard to take it in different directions. On this one, we'll see, it'll be more possible to do so. So we're going to spend the bulk of the time on the article and then quickly look at its reception in various other pieces over the past few years. This whole discussion was really triggered by the opening of Yeshivat Maharat in 2009, which Orthodox Ordination Program for Women. What exactly the title is, Maharat, Rabbah. Now it's sort of open, that's changed over time. And that, to some degree, that's animated some of the controversy over it. But generally, the controversy over it is the very institution itself, the idea of giving ordination to women, something that doesn't have much of any precedent within Orthodoxy, even within other denominations, was a factor of the past few decades. Before the 20th century, it didn't exist in any context, certainly in any formalized context. So it's a new thing, and it's a good test case for the question of tradition and change, tradition and modernity, whatever you want to call it, as this is something that the place of women in the Western world has shifted dramatically in the past few centuries, but especially in the past few decades. Women now participate in the workforce equally or even more than men in Western countries, and there are no limitations in that sense. So the question becomes, what about within Judaism, within various areas of Judaism? This comes up in the case context of egalitarianism in halacha, where it's more complicated because halacha generally it's harder to change halacha if you can change it at all, whatever it means to change halacha. So those cases are not in dispute here, although other sort of gray cases have been discussed. But the place where this discussion really comes to a head is ordination, because it's a position of leadership. There are no obvious absolute halachic strictures against it, as we'll see. So it's really the place where these competing ideas face off. The question of, do we want to preserve tradition? Do we want to adjust to the spirit of the times? Do we want to do that more slowly? What halakhic categories might be relevant that would limit this? So that's why this is a hot topic, or has been a hot topic, certainly for the last 9 years since Maharat opened, and even before then, and within other movements in previous decades as well. So again, this piece was published in Tradition in 2016, based on remarks sent to the RCA convention in 2010. Rav Lichtenstein didn't travel to that convention, so he wrote his remarks and sent them, and that's why they exist in this form. So he starts off by saying, with a general point, that the place of women in leadership and clerical roles has aroused discussion and considerable controversy in recent decades, in general religious world and the Jewish world. It relates to the place of women in both pragmatic and spiritual senses, right? Can women have equal careers? That's shifted. Can women have equal spiritual careers or equal spiritual roles in some sense? What differences should there be? That's less clear. It has wide ramifications, generally, right? And as usual, Rav Lichtenstein starts off with the broad conceptual issues at stake. But there's also a local meaning and a local need for examination in the eyes of halacha and hashkafa, which is what he sets out to do. First, again, defining the terms, defining the broad conceptual issues, we need to define what we regard as leadership. Right? If it's about women in leadership, so first, we need to say women, what's the situation, you know, how have issues involving gender and women shifted recently, and then you have to define leadership. This is a standard mode of writing for Lichtenstein. So we have to define what we regard as leadership, its constitutive essence, its functional exercise, and its mode of attainment. Right, so what essentially is leadership? How do you exercise leadership, and how do you get there? And there's a need to distinguish between between the political, cultural realm and the idea of power, that there are some leaders, you put someone in a position of power, they become a leader, right? Someone's the head of an organization, the CEO, for example, of an organization, or you know, or any administrative position. But then there's another side that's pragmatic power, or I guess you can lead without being in a position of leadership. You lead by example, you can lead by just knowing people and influencing them in various ways. You can harness charisma as a vehicle for influencing and inspiring others. Utilize talents in order to promote an agenda. Now, this, of course, is an important distinction to make, because what's being discussed is, in terms of smicha for women, is primarily the formal position of leadership, to be the rabbi of a shul, to have the title rabbi. It doesn't necessarily bear on the broader idea of influencing through one's conduct, or soft influence. So that's an important distinction to make. So you can agree with some leadership is legislated, is really formalized, you're in a formal position of leadership, and then there's the more informal, pragmatic side of leadership. So how does this play out within the Jewish world? And Rav Lichtenstein then undertakes a survey of different people and how they feel, not a formal survey, just presents the different positions. So, and there are some people who want to shift things more, and some people want to shift things less. For example, he says, many women regard themselves as motivated by genuine religious passion. They want to increase their kiyum mitzvot, their observance of halacha, their habatzat Torah, their learning of Torah. They're trying to grow and build on themselves in that way. That creates a greater challenge, right? It's not like people are saying, well, you know, I have these goals for feminism and halacha is one area, and I just superimpose feminist goals onto Torah. Some people may have that attitude, but what Rav Lichtenstein's point to is some people's attitude in this realm stems precisely from the fact they want to increase their avodas Hashem. They want more opportunities, and it's not an external idea as much as it's an internal idea of genuine religious passion that's motivating these people's these women's interest in increasing their observance. So it's a complex issue, and here, interestingly, Rav Lichtenstein goes out to define some, I guess you could call it, some degree of gender differences in a theoretical sense. He quotes the pasuk in Mishlei, Shema b'ni musar avicha, ve'al titosh torat imecha. Right, listen, son, to the ethics of your father, and don't forget the teaching of the Torah of your mother. And the Rav said this relates to intuitive wisdom that women have, bina yasera. But Rav Lichtenstein takes a slightly different angle, that there's a difference between, the point is there's two different sets of values, two different ways of being, modes of being in the world, the masculine and the feminine. The masculine one is more generally more set on power as a barometer for meaning and value in life, whereas the feminine is more focused on the place of spirituality. And he writes this important point: we regard the Torah's emphasis upon the metaphysical equality of Adam and Eve at the dawn of creation as infinitely more meaning than the division of the pie of mastery. Adam and Eve, and both the idea of power and the idea of spirituality are given equal place, or given, they're both important. You know, leading and being in positions of leadership per se, and this idea of the spiritual. And that's why he writes, our heroines are not Medea, Clemnestra, Lady Macbeth, who were queens and the like, or Joan of Arc, or a soldier. Ours are the Imahot, Miriam and Chana, from whom we've learned how to engage in tefillah. So this is some degree of, an essentialized gender distinction, right? Men are this, women are that. I don't think it's meant in the sense that if you're a woman, the presumption is you should not lead a corporation. If you're a man, you can't be truly spiritual. Obviously, that's not what's meant. What's meant is that these are the general categories that each applies to, and what each one implies, and that our goal should be to pursue both. Meaning, it seems like whether you're a man or a woman, you need to both pursue, you know, leading things, running things in the world, and also this idea of spirituality. They're both important. So that's a way of valuing women and men and what they stand for in this binary system as equal. They're both equally important. So he writes, that message is crucial, and yet for many, it does not fully satisfy. Right? For many women, they'll say, okay, very nice that you're telling me that you value what I stand for. That's not good enough. And the way they see the current scene, the reality, they find it deeply troubling, and some cast the blame at the doorstep of the halachic establishment. He quotes the line, originally said by Blue Greenberg, where there is a rabbinic will, they intone, there is a halachic way. And if something's wrong, and if things aren't right in terms of who has which position, the wardens or the rabbis are responsible. So Rav Lichtenstein says that the source of this is understandable. You can understand why, I guess, women who see that women aren't given proper spiritual opportunities might be upset. But at the same time, it's thoroughly regrettable because they're making accusations against God and against God's emissaries or the rabbis. And the implication is that in the secular world, everything is good, and they take concern with human needs, whereas in the religious realm, you don't have that, and women just suffer in religious context. And of course, this is a trope beyond the Orthodox feminism. This is a trope more generally, that religion persecutes women, and only the secular world is fair, and we need to free women from the tyranny of religion. This is an attitude that you'll hear in certain places, I think, was more fashionable actually several decades ago than now. Now even within the academy and the secular world, people are realizing some of the judgment implied in that and are more open to understanding women in the realm of religion. We could talk about that more another time maybe. But in any event, so he's saying this is a regrettable attitude. That's one approach. Another approach is people who are not happy with the status quo, but instead of saying, well, we need to fight, we need to change things, and you know the rabbis are no good, instead they say, okay, you know, they're resigned to their fate. These things are never going to change. Things are never going to get better. And, you know, we'll just suffer through it. And then he says, is not, first of all, that's a lamentable conclusion. First of all, because it's false. The idea that there's no way of modifying things is not true. And because it's immobilizing. There's no interest in religious growth. That's on the side of those who are, you know, who are upset with the status quo. In terms of those who are more moderate and happier with the status quo, some are traditionally oriented women who are just happy in their community. They're not really bothered by these things. They're satisfied. So here you might say, okay, great. And I know many people who would say, great, if you're happy with your status, that's the ideal. You're not causing trouble. You're happy with things as they are. What could be wrong? But even here, Rav Lichtenstein says, the level of satisfaction is not quite what we desire. Right, the goal should be for people to constantly strive, for people to aim for more spiritually and more religiously. So if someone says, well, you know, there aren't so many opportunities for me in terms of Talmud Torah, let's say, give an example, but I'm happy doing what I do, there's something really missing there. That's not a good position to be in either. So the question is, where does one go from here? Right, after laying out the different positions of people, where do we go from here? And he says there's no easy solution. There's no one size fits all. You can't just open a rabbinical school for women and that'll solve the problems. You can't just shut down all those things and that'll solve all the problems. And certainly there are a lot of people out there who say, just do this and okay, and we'll split orthodoxy in half and we'll be the firm half and the other half will disappear. Or we'll just follow our lights and open this institution and push what we can. And if there are backwards people on the right, too bad for them. Right? You hear that rhetoric a fair amount. And the Rav Lichtenstein's point is that's not an option. A facile, uniform solution will not do. You need to be a lot more, you need to think more complexly, and also you need to think differentially, that different communities may be better to have different things be the norm in that community, and not with a sense of breaking between different communities, but to make sure that each Talmud Chacham in each community should engage in learned discourse with respect to the needs and options relevant to the topic, and figure out what makes sense for their community, what measure of flexibility is appropriate within halachic limits. And you also need to know each person that's aspiring for leadership. The point is, it's really a call, this paragraph towards the end of page 2, is a call for sophisticated and critical and complex thinking about the topic, which often, this is my editorial comment, often is lacking in these polemics and in all polemics, right? Generally, polemics brings out the extremists. Talks about the Mesilas Yesharim / F.H. Bradley, a person to focus on their station and duties, their chovato be'olamo, their religious goals, and how to help inspire religious growth, how to build Talmud Torah, how to build religious commitment in various contexts. So with that, after that long introduction, both about the nature of contemporary issues regarding women, about what leadership is, about different people with different attitudes towards the status quo, about how there's a need for complexity, for the last maybe quarter of the actual article, Rav Lichtenstein talks about the particular issues and really just in passing, just quickly relates to them. So he writes, with respect to some limited issues currently in debate, halacha, of course, determines our standard. Right? We're focused, our halacha defines the basic norms. However, we should earnestly and honestly strive to ascertain that our halachic judgment be sound and comprehensive. You can make halachic arguments for a lot of things. That doesn't mean that they're the right way to go. You have to make sure that the judgment is correct. And that's why serious and responsible poskim, as he writes, impeccably committed and with the catholicity of Torah knowledge, knowing the broad, big picture of Torah overall, they should think about this sugya, and he mentions they should give greater weight to the category of lasot nachat ruach lenashim. I don't know if people know about this halachic category. To make women happy, basically, is the literal translation. So the Gemara talks about, actually, we're talking about smicha for women. The Gemara actually in several places talks about smicha for women. People aware of this? So in general, the Torah says v'samach es yadu al rosh ha'ola, that you and the ola and several other karbanos, you do smicha, you put your hands on the karban. And the Sifra and later the Gemara talks about whether women do smicha or not. And it says, well, midoraisa, women should not do smicha for various reasons. But still, even though they shouldn't, I think it's Rabbi Yossi, said that women can do smicha, lay their hands on the animal, he would allow it, lasos nachas ruach l'nashim, in order to make, they wanted to do it to make them happy. And Rav Lichtenstein is endorsing here very quickly, and people have made this, have made reference to this line, not just because it's in the context of smicha. Smicha part is just a funny coincidence, but the idea that that if people are striving for something spiritual, for spiritual greatness or spiritual opportunities, our goal should be to help them. Even if it's not perfect halachically, even if they shouldn't be doing smicha, we should find ways to help them. And here, there's a call for giving greater weight to that category than it generally is given. He says this is admittedly a possibly risky proposition. He understands the reluctance to using it. But if we want to sustain the integrity of psach, we ought to at least give this element consideration. So this is a fairly somewhat radical notion that, and we saw something similar when we talked about the social and human aspects of halacha. In that article, he says that certain halachic categories like tsa'ar or tsorach gadol or human, basically all related to human need, aren't as developed in the psach as they should be or as they could be. And he thinks that he regrets that. And this is a similar point. He regrets the fact that lasos nachas ruach l'nashim is not as used as it could be, despite the risks. And he talks about those risks in that article too. There's a need to integrate that. So that's big picture halacha, but then he gets to the details. The thornier problem is the issue of conferred or legislated leadership. Not the more general idea of influencing people overall, but specifically having a position, having smicha, leading a shul. In practice, this issue just decomposes into two separate problems: an officer in a shul and smicha for women. So he focuses on the bottom line summary. It's a longer discussion. He says that it's possible to solve the problem of a officer in the shul. Right? It's not so difficult to get around whatever halachic complications there are for a woman serving as the president of a shul, let's say. But the second, for smicha, it's not the case that he can solve all the problems easily. It touches upon elements long abjured by either fundamental halacha or minhag Yisrael, and its formal spiritual status. And therefore, as regards the former, formal spiritual status, holding the traditional line is for us very much in order. Meaning, he says that in 2010, he said, and later published in 2016, he didn't think that it was proper at that point to advance smicha for women, given what he calls both fundamental halacha and minhag Yisrael. Now, we're going to see some of these in other articles, but presumably what he's referring to, by halacha, he may be talking about srara, a prohibition at least expanded by the Rambam to relate to prohibition of women being in various leadership positions, although it's possible he himself, Rav Lichtenstein himself, wasn't so concerned with that. Another option, an option for minhag Yisrael is, or the Ramah talks about how women wouldn't be shochtim or shochtot, because that wasn't the practice, and maybe that extends to other religious leadership positions. So that's what he writes, and he says that's what the situation is now, right? For us, it's in order to hold the traditional line. However, he writes, a generation hence, this presentation may be dismissed as a grudging concession of no genuine moral weight and of no spiritual enrichment, right? Maybe 30 years from now, they'll see this as being too firm, as it were, too rigid. Then again, it may be read as a deft fusion of Tchelet and Lavan of the halachic universe. Maybe it's trying to mix together the different aspects, the current needs, the halachic tradition, and the goal is to set aside guiding principles. There's no simple solution. It is my fervent hope that consideration of the issue at hand will reflect the complexity and sensitivity of the topic, and further discussion of these matters will be conducted in the spirit of Azn Beru, Yirei Hashem, Ish El Re'eh. Again, he closes with a call for nuance and for I guess, harmony among those discussing it, as opposed to fighting, which had certainly been featured then and certainly has been featured since then. I'm not sure how many people took into account that last line. But certainly, throughout the article, there's a lot of a major call for nuance and a focus on different sides of the discussion. So much for the article. Now, if you had to sum it up, pro women smicha or anti? Right, you could read it and not be sure. Now, there, what?
Like almost like a not quite.
Not quite, right? Like he's willing to give in on some things or not give in, to say that some things are advisable now, other things not, but not now, but maybe in the future,
right,
things will change. And there's no hard usser or mutter here, right? It's partially because it's a guidance paper; it's not a psak. And in general, Rabbi didn't write psakim. He may have given psak in various cases, but the goal here is guidance, and a lot of the guidance is to take into account the complexity of the issue. I say, well, think about nachas ruach nashim a little bit. Probably not ideal to give smicha right now. Down the road, maybe that'll be too rigid. So there's different sides to it, and as we'll see, it's taken by people in different directions. So Rabbi Nadi Helfgott, this is actually slightly before that article, he discusses some of the concerns that people have. He seems to say that the halachic issues are not really of concern, and the main concerns are communal issues, whether the community is ready for it or not. And we're not going to go through the details here, we simply don't have time, but he mentions that srara is something people are concerned with based on the Rambam, but that's only the Rambam's position. Other people don't have that issue. Other Rishonim don't seem to have that issue. Furthermore, he writes that towards the bottom of page 4, Mori Virabi, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, in a conversation with former students currently serving the rabbinate, December 2009, discuss this halachic issue. I believe I was at the discussion he's referring to. So he says that Rav Lichtenstein says that at least the Dati Lumi community in Israel made it pretty clear that they do not accept that Rambam as a problem, because the religious parties have put members of Knesset as women as potential members of Knesset, and that's a position of Sarah much more than a rabbi. Shul rabbis can get hired and fired at any time. They don't have control over things like division of resources, how much people get to eat, or how much healthcare people get, whereas members of Knesset actually do have that power in many cases. So that's his thought, that it's not relevant. That's one of the points that Rabbi Helfgott makes here. He says, are people consistent with their methodology? Then he says, he also takes issue with another approach. Some people say that you shouldn't give women smicha because it's like imitating the other denominations, chikui haminim, imitating the sects, the sectarians, and domel reformim, apparently, an Israeli rabbi said. So he said this is not really a classical category. It's something people made up in the 19th, 20th century. This is basically what he argues. And even if this is true, it's not clear that it applies here. We should decide based on what's actually the right thing to do rather than concern for that. Maybe you can just say in the other direction. Rav Ovadia Yosef actually says that because of concern of people, you know, becoming less frum, we should actually be more accommodating, not less, right? If you're less accommodating because you're worried about a slippery slope, as we talked about last time, that can lead to people leaving completely, right? Because we're so not accommodating. Maybe we should be accommodating. Anyway, his goal is to say that the halachic arguments are not convincing, and the issue should be based on the community. As in many of these other cases in which halacha, sociology, halacha, communal norms, and comfort level mesh together, the issues will probably be decided on the ground by committed community and its rabbinic leadership. rather than ex cathedra, people saying usher. So that's his argument. Notably, he quotes Rav Lichtenstein on Svara. This is before Rav Lichtenstein's article, but he quotes a conversation with him about Svara. Similarly, this is probably the most exhaustive article and the longest article on the topic by Michael Broyd and Shlomo Brody. They're not related, and they spell their names differently. But surveying the issue, both halachic and meta-halachic concerns, who can get smicha, or is smicha to be limited to men? Only people on the Sanhedrin should get smicha. Maybe there's a prohibition of srara. Can women, is there an issue of modesty if women decide halacha? Should women decide halacha at all? Should that be limited in some way? Those are the halachic concerns they raise. They also talk about mesora. And they include under mesora the tradition, the minhag, of not having women be shochet. How exactly does that apply nowadays? How do we, the fallout, as it were, from the fact that women now learn Torah, as we discussed last time, and there's a need for them to be, you know, a woman who's knowledgeable in Torah doesn't have any position where they can use their learning. Is there a need to adjust based on that? Should we be concerned with changes happening too quickly? Should we make sure that they move at a slower pace? Various practical issues that need to be resolved. In terms of, like, what exactly is the role of a rabbi if a shul contract says the rabbi has to be available to lame the Torah, and they hold that women shouldn't lame, and then they hire a woman as a rabbi, you can see the obvious technical, practical problem there. They talk about, concerned about non-Orthodox movements, again, that similar to Reform, concerned about breakdown of gender distinctions, but I just wanted to call your attention toward the top of page 9, in the context of similarity to non-Orthodox movements. If we're too open, the argument goes to women playing being rabbis, let's say, that will look like we're being Reform. And in this context, they quote Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, serious and responsible poskim, impeccably committed with the Catholicity of Torah knowledge, should, I believe, give greater weight in recent generations than has been assigned to the dispensation of Lasus Nachas Ruach Nashim, citing the Gemara in Shulchan Aruch, as the basis for permitting what might otherwise have been proscribed. So that's along the way of their massive survey. One of the points they make is they build on Rav Lichtenstein for leniency, right? So they take the part from Rav Lichtenstein that's Mako, just like Roy Helfgott focused on the Rav Lichtenstein saying it's not Srara. Here they're building on the part of Rav Lichtenstein saying you should look at Nachas Ruach HaNashim. Those are, I guess, two of the more Mako sides of Rav Lichtenstein. We're not going to have time to look at the OU's decision based on seven rabbis. Most of them are affiliated with YU. They don't quote Rav Lichtenstein. They also are much more extensive. Although I think it's hard to argue this one or the other, but they certainly, they're not diverging from Rav Lichtenstein in any way. I think in some ways they set the standard for this discussion. Once they came out with their decision in, I think it was, early 2016, does that make sense? Or mid-2016, whenever it was. We'll put that on the side for now, but we'll end with an article by Avram Gordimer, who's been outspoken as an opponent of left-wing orthodoxy for several years now. And Rabbi Riskin's program started, ordained two women as Morot Hora'ah. I think they did that in 2016. He writes about it in 2017, saying they're trying to give them smicha, they're trying to make women be dayanot, and that's usher in the Shulchan Aruch, and even just to be rabbis is a problem. He quotes this organization, he's a part of Traditional Orthodox Rabbis of America, which spells Torah. He quotes the Torah as saying that they shouldn't do it, and that they're misleading. And fine, along the way, he mentions that Rav Amnon Bazak of Yeshivat Haaretzion critiqued those opposed to Rabbi Riskin's approach. And as he says, towards the top of page 14, Rabbi Bazak claimed that Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein also favorably entertained the future possibility of women serving in the roles created by Rabbi Riskin. Right? That he invokes Rabbi Lichtenstein as being open to women getting smicha at some point, which, as we saw right at the end of the article, he says, not now. In the future, maybe people will view what I'm saying as what Rav Bazak argues, and the response, if you jump down, is that Rabbi Gordimer looks at the history. In 2010, he says, prior to the adoption of the resolution of the RCA's poskim delivered remarks One rabbi who would have delivered remarks on the occasion, Rabbi Lichtenstein, was unable to attend. He sent a letter, and he quotes from the letter, "Smicha for women touches upon elements long abjured by either fundamental halacha or minhag Yisrael. Holding the traditional line is for us very much in order." Nope, you got Rabbi Lichtenstein wrong. They're arguing about the same thing, several lines away from each other. One's emphasizing one part as Rabbi Lichtenstein's position, the other one emphasizes a different line, and you have two different readings of the tshuva. Does it tell us there shouldn't be smicha for women, or that we can now consider it as a real option? And both drawing on the same article. So I think this is a good example of how someone's position on something can be taken in different directions. It's hard to really say who gets it right, because the whole point of the article is that it's such a complex thing. You can't simplify things so much. It gives a couple of guiding principles. I mean, certainly people who create a lot of machlokas are not following the guiding principles. That much you can say, because that's clearer. But in terms of guidance on this particular issue, it's less obvious. I guess one distinction in terms of the OU tshuva is there was less... That basically had a sort of compromise in the sense it said women can't be rabbis, but women can do many of the things that rabbis generally do, although not all of them. So that made a compromise between different aspects of the job, as it were, but was set. Didn't say, right now it's this, but in the future it's open to change. It said there's more halachic issues and more of a hard, this is usur, this is not usur, or arguably not usur, as opposed to avoiding usur mutter and saying here are some guiding principles, partially because the different nature of it was a decision of psak, as it was called, rather than guiding language. But so there are some differences between the two. But I think in any event, this is certainly an interesting and very intriguing case study as to Rehuksin taking a position, a nuanced position, that then gets pulled in different directions following that decision.